With the Brennan Center for Justice, this is Victoria Bassetti. In our edition of The Line that looks at voter fraud, you may have heard a conversation I had on the streets of Manhattan with Terry Golway. He's a journalist and a historian, and like me, is completely fascinated by stories of Tammany Hall, the New York City political machine that's a byword for corruption and election fraud. The interview was a favorite of mine, but we only had time for about 6 minutes of it in the episode. So I wanted to share the full version of our conversation here. I'm standing here in Manhattan on the corner of Union Square and 17th Street in front of a boarded up old building. It's being prepared for demolition. It's got store closing signs, signs for vodka made in Poland. The remnants of a deli are standing here and a big sign that says, "Danger, active construction site." It may not look like it, but this is Tammany Hall. I'm here to meet Terry Golway, a historian and the author of a book called Machine Made, The History of Tammany Hall. And here he is.
Hi there.
So this is Tammany Hall.
This is it, yes. It's a magnificent building. You know, when you look at it, you see how sturdy it was built, and it's sort of built on an almost monumental scale. Obviously, they thought they would be here a long time. And the irony being, it opened in 1929. By 1943, it was closed.
100 years ago, what would we have seen coming in and out of this building? What would have been going on?
Well, more like 80 years ago, you might have seen the mayor of New York. You might have seen the governor, depending on his relationship with Tammany Hall. You certainly would see all manner of busy, mostly men, but later on women as well, coming in and out, probably with papers in hand, clipboards perhaps. They were the ward healers, you know. They were these supposedly corrupt figures who took cash, but who really were in charge of distributing favors, who were the eyes and ears of this political organization.
But for almost 100 years, from the mid-19th century to the, you know, kind of early 20th century, Tammany Hall was the power source for politics in New York. Tammany Hall was the epicenter.
It was the epicenter. And of course, this was the third Tammany Hall. The first Tammany Hall was down by City Hall. Tammany Hall is often misunderstood. It actually is a building, which I think people find hard to believe. But it really is shorthand. Tammany Hall meant the Democratic County Committee of New York County, Manhattan. So it was basically the Democratic Party, and it was a society to which many of the members belonged, the Society of St. Tammany. Therefore, the place where they met became known as Tammany Hall.
But in Tammany Hall, in popular imagination, it's a byword for corruption and voter fraud.
And with good reason, because it was corrupt, and it engaged in voter fraud, for sure. One of the ways in which a great power in Tammany Hall, a guy named Richard Croker, one of the ways he gained fame and power is the fact that he could be counted on to vote multiple times on election day. He loved to vote. He liked democracy. So I believe it was the election of 1868 or so. He voted 12 or 13 times under different names, with the same name, different districts. These were known as repeaters, and they were people who could be counted on to vote repeatedly on election day.
That 1868 election, the one where Croker voted multiple times, it's sort of legendary in the history of Tammany Hall and voter fraud. I've heard about these immigration mills that Tammany Hall was running. What was that about?
Well, that sort of shows the good side and the bad side of Tammany. You know, Tammany came to power or achieved its path to power with the arrival of immigrants. And immigration caused great disruption in New York City in the 1840s and 1850s. This was the height of the Know-Nothing movement. And there were political parties, the Whigs, and even the early Republicans were very anti-immigrant. Tammany, on the other hand, welcomed immigrants, you know, and helped change the power dynamics in New York by recruiting these immigrants, by inviting them to participate enthusiastically and energetically. So in 1868, or so the legend goes, Tammany basically, you know, naturalized as many immigrants as possible, got them to vote in local elections that year, and supposedly stole elections as a result of these fraudulent naturalizations.
after 1868, Tammany Hall continued to build a reputation for stealing elections. What else did they do?
For example, in 1905, in a very hotly contested mayoral election, in which it looked like the newspaper publisher William Randolph Hearst was going to win on a third-party line, it was said that boxes of ballots were found in the East River, in the Hudson River, and that was why Hearst lost. It certainly was why Hearst thought he lost, but that was one example where supposedly Tammany inspectors just threw out the votes.
And then later, in the 1920s, Tammany was very actively involved in the election for governor, and there was, we always hear these stories about certain districts or precincts waiting until the upstate vote comes in and then figuring out exactly how many more votes they need in order to beat the upstate vote. Did that sort of stuff happen?
Well, sort of. What happened in 1918, when Al Smith was running for governor, and in 1928, when Franklin Roosevelt was running for governor, in both of those occasions, the vote was very tight. And in essence, Tammany, which supported Franklin Roosevelt, much to the chagrin of his biographers, was waiting on the upstate vote, which was waiting on the downstate vote. In essence, both sides were waiting to see how they might be able to manipulate the results. In my research on those two elections, I think it was the upstate Republican vote that was being corrupted, or that was in danger of being corrupted. In fact, Roosevelt in 28 sent people like Robert Wagner upstate to make sure that the upstate vote was legitimate. While Tammany is synonymous with election fraud, the people they were running against weren't exactly pristine either.
Were there other Tammany Halls? Like if you went to Cleveland, was there a Tammany Hall? Or if you went to Cincinnati or any other major city in the United States in the 19th century or the early 20th century, was there a machine?
There was a machine in almost any city that had immigrants. They didn't judge immigrants. The nativists looked at immigrants and saw them as uneducated, as un-American, as foreign. The machine said, we don't care how they worship God. Maybe they don't even worship God. We don't care what language they speak. All we care about is, will they come out and vote for us? So by offering them jobs, by offering them something as simple and as complicated as cultural respect, they earn the loyalty of these immigrants.
So a lot of those Tammany Hall votes that we're talking about, they were legit votes. It wasn't like Tammany Hall was getting out 100,000 completely fake votes. Most of Tammany Hall votes were for real.
Absolutely. And when you look at the electoral catastrophes that they suffered, particularly in the early 20th century, if they were stealing elections, they weren't very good at it because they lost a lot. I mean, the idea of a machine sort of churning out voter after voter and victory after victory doesn't square with the record. Tammany lost many big elections to reformers. And again, if they were so good at stealing elections, why did the opposition win so often?
Well, in the late 19th century and early 20th century, the progressive movement began reforming our election system. And that to a certain degree inhibited Tammany Hall, but it also significantly decreased turnout, didn't it?
Yes, because the professionalization of politics sort of took some of the fun out of it. You know, we wanted to study the issues, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't, of course, but they wanted it to be done dispassionately. And what Tammany understood is that politics is about passion. It's about self-interest. It's not always about what is the common good. I mean, it would be great if we could all vote that way. But Tammany understood that to turn out the vote, people need to know what's in it for them. And that actually was the magic of Tammany Hall, is that they stripped democracy of a lot of the bromides of the founding fathers. You know, this idea that, you know, you could deliver a vote that was dispassionate and disinterested. Tammany said no. They understood people wanted to know how politics could help them, particularly if you were poor and all you had was your vote. Well, why wouldn't you bargain with it? Now, this idea might seem corrupt to us in the 21st century. It didn't seem corrupt to the average Lower East Side resident who was relatively powerless except for that vote.
So
by the 20th century, for a variety of reasons, the professionalization of elections, the change in the ideological tenor of the time, Tammany Hall began fading. Why? What happened?
Well, it began fading even as this building behind us was being dedicated in 1929. If you had been here on July 4th, 1929, with Franklin Roosevelt, with Al Smith, you would say, Tammany Hall is here to stay. And yet by 1939, it was almost a relic. And the reason for that, there are many reasons. Part of it was because of the New Deal. But more to the point, the core immigrants of Tammany at its height, the Irish, the Italians, and the Jews, were beginning to leave Manhattan. That was the core, that was Tammany's constituency. They were beginning to become maybe more conservative, and there was nothing to replace them with. And plus the fact that Franklin Roosevelt and the New Deal made the machine an anachronism. You didn't have to go down to Tammany Hall to get a favor. The government said you were entitled to that favor. So I think that was part of it.
So we're standing in front of this building, the last Tammany Hall. It's boarded up. It's got plywood with graffiti all over it. It's got warning construction signs. It's about to be gutted. In a few years, it's going to be a gleaming new retail center. Why, in spite of all this evidence of Tammany Hall's decrepitude, why is Tammany Hall still the story that everyone goes to today? In 2016, to justify and to say that there is voter fraud. Why does it loom so large?
Because it's New York. I mean, I think that's a very large part of it. There were machines in every city in the Northeast, in the Midwest, Chicago had them. Chicago still has a machine. But Tammany Hall, because it was in the center of intellectual life in the United States, in the center of journalistic life, Tammany Hall took on this aura. I've looked at Irish politics in Ireland, and what I see is references in Ireland to Tammany Hall tactics. So its fame, you know, crossed borders.
Yeah, Tammany Hall couldn't steal a box of Kleenex if it wanted to today.
No.
It couldn't steal a pack of gum.
No.
But lawyers, courts, when they're looking for evidence of corruption, cite Tammany Hall.
Well, it's what they learn in school. I mean, I don't think there's a U.S. 1 history book, and I used to be a history professor. I don't think there's a history book about this era that doesn't have the words Tammany Hall. So it becomes a common reference point. Now, the fact is, there were far more corrupt machines in other cities, but other cities aren't New York.
Terry Golway, thank you so much for your time and for standing with us on a street corner in Manhattan, a noisy street corner in Manhattan in front of an old boarded up building.
It's always a pleasure to be in the shadow of Tammany Hall.
Terry Golway, he's the author of Machine Made, Tammany Hall and the Creation of Modern American Politics. For more about the history of voting in America and the continuing struggle for voting rights today, visit us at brennancenter.org. For the Brennan Center for Justice, I'm Victoria Bassetti.